Welcome to Afros in the Diaspora. My name is Sarah. I am your host, and together we will vent, rant, laugh, and cry as we discuss the highs and lows of being an immigrant. Stay tuned for stories that will inspire, inform, entertain, and give hope. This is Afros in the Diaspora. What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Afros in the Diaspora podcast. And today we have Oga Akim. He is a community leader. He is a fashion designer, CEO, you know, founder of the Farihara, you know, bespoke brand for menswear here in Canada. Mr. Akim, how are you?
I did.
Welcome.
What's up, Sarah? Thank you for having me here.
Yes, this is going to be so exciting. Okay, we're going to dive right into our icebreakers. And Akim, respectfully, I'm going to try to get you. Respectfully, I'm going to try to get you. So are you ready? Are you ready for us to dive into those icebreakers?
Oh, you get me with the icebreaker.
Are you sure? I feel like, because, you know.
Break the ice now.
Let's break it. Okay, so Akim, you're Nigerian. So we're going to ask you some trivia from your fatherland and your motherland, okay?
Hey. Yeah, okay. All right, let's go.
All right. Nigeria is intersected by which two major rivers?
So, just for the purpose of not embarrassing me, you couldn't have given me expo before this. I have to embarrass myself.
No, this is not an embarrassing, you know, stuff. I told you, we're going to ask you trivia about Nigeria.
I cannot lie. Mm-hmm. I don't know it, but I will use a lifeline. And the lifeline I will use is a song that we used to sing back then. The rivers of Africa. Niger,
and one more. Now, Niger, Benue, Congo, Orange, Limpopo, Zambezi. So it's Niger and Benue.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Yes, you got 50%. That's not bad.
It's a pass. Pass mark somewhere.
Do you want options? Because I have options for these questions.
Since you've been back, well, you know what? Give me another one. Let's have another one.
Let's try. We'll do a few. Okay. What are the colors of the Nigerian flag? Let's go easy.
Green, white, green. If you want me to tell you what those colors mean, I can tell you, eh? But
okay, now I'll shine your light.
In the interest of minding time, I won't tell you. I got 100% with that one.
Okay, no wahala. All right, so who composed the Nigerian national anthem, Arise O Compatriots? I have options. Let me give you options. So there's Taiwo Akinkunmi, Ben Odiase, Lillian John Williams, and Flora Shaw. If you say Flora Shaw, I will collect your Nigerian ID card, your Nigerian passport, and I'll confiscate it.
It will be Taiwo Akinkunmi.
It's Ben Odiase.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's move on from this one. Let me know.
My Nigerian people, just so you know, these questions, maybe only 30% of us will be able to answer.
Remember so, them. Yeah.
Don't
wait for
the big test. How Nigerian you are. I just want to tell you people.
I know. Oh, yes.
That's a good one, though. That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. Okay, so I'm just going to move straight on to the riddles. I'm going to ask you a few riddles back to back.
So we never break. The ice finished. The ice never break.
We're almost there. We're 50% done. Don't worry. We're in Canada. The ice is very deep. It's very cold here.
Okay. Oh, break and finish now.
Okay. All right. So they come out at night without being called, and they are lost in the day without being stolen. What are they?
Now, will it be that now? No, be spirits. Yes, now. Now, Willy Willy,
yo, you, please, what is Willy Willy?
That spirit now, those kind things where they wake up on night, where would they hear the story? I never see them before.
You know, I have a different understanding of what Willy Willy is. I've never heard Willy Willy be referred to as spirit, but okay, this is a new one.
Indulge me in your own.
My understanding of Willy Willy up until now is the reproductive organ of men. That is...
Yes. That one is JT that's now.
What's JT? What's it be JT?
Mo leave that one. Mo just go straight. Now we don't need to break the ice now.
No, you must answer this question. No, you must answer it. Okay, you said spirit. Spirit is not the answer, unfortunately.
Which?
You have one more try. Okay, you know what? They come in the sky. They come out in the sky without being called, and they're lost during the day without being stolen. That should narrow things down.
They come up in the sky. That's very poetical. Talk them again.
They come out in the sky. They come out in the sky at night without being called, and they are lost in the day without being stolen.
Wow. Are you talking about stars?
Yes, stars.
How do you explain this slowly? You know, it took me to that poetic side.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. All right, so we'll do one more, and then the ice will be completely broken, okay? How many months have 28 days? Very simple.
There's only one. That's February.
That's not correct. How many months have 28 days?
All the months now. So now on top show, you want me to just embarrass myself?
No.
Those are trick questions.
That was very, 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 yeah. Those are riddles, very trick questions. Yeah. Okay. Do you want one more so that you shine? Should I?
You know, it's okay. You know, everybody, yeah. I've learned to learn from failure. So I've learned from this.
Don't look at it as failure now. You win some, you lose some. You got some of these ones today. Okay. Hakeem, thank you so much for indulging with me on this roller coaster of a icebreaker/trivia that we're doing. Hakeem, we will be talking about your story today, and just to highlight your resilience of how you moved from Nigeria, you know, came here as a student, and now you are you're literally a community leader here in your city in Calgary. You own a business, you're thriving and doing so well. Would you just kind of take us to the very beginning of your journey of how you decided that Canada was the country, we are moving to the abroad? Yeah, just take us there.
Wow. It's a whole lot, but I'll start. I think deciding to come to Canada back in 2000 or so, 2001 was when the idea, but I've always known since my SS3 days in Nigeria, which was my last year in high school, that I wanted to come to a place that is not America and that is not UK. I didn't want to go to the state, didn't want to go to the UK. But those were lofty ideas because I didn't come from a family that could afford it. Looking at the economic stratification that, you know, my mother belonged, we didn't have the money, just to cut the long story short. But of course, it was a lofty idea, you know, by me, because I thought I did well in high school. So if anything, I'll go to university in Nigeria and still be somebody in life. So I think it was a year after I graduated in high school that my mother, she said, Okomi. That's my husband, you know, being the firstborn, and, you know, I was like the man of the house. Okomi, you want in Los America, which, you know, the Yoruba saying, won't you go to America with the way you've performed in school? So outrightly, I told her no. So we had a beef, a big one.
Wow.
Yeah, because I was decided not to go to the state. And of course, we had a beef over something we couldn't afford, whether it was the state or elsewhere. But we had the beef, like, how dare you say you don't want to go to America, you know? A friend came, you know, one of our very good friends. She was the one that just told her, hey, look, the boy is right. You know, Canada, because I chose Canada. Canada is way better in terms of education, you know, and focus as well. So we started processing my Canadian application, started going to Internet Cafe back in Lagos. So
back in the days,
I think I was, I was 19 then. So they go into Connor Cafe, applying. Then I wanted to come here and do law, because I had an idea of the way it worked in the UK, which you could, you know, go from high school, you do your A level, then you're studying law. That was what I, you know, knew then. So I thought it was the same thing in Canada. Until I started applying, I didn't see law. I said, wow, voila. So I settled for the next thing that I was good at in school, which was economics and commerce. Apply, got, and this was sleepless night inside the Internet Cafe. You know, the time of putting on generator, you know. So, but it was, it was all worth it. Apply, got, admission into a couple of schools, including Calgary, Windsor. Then it was time to process the papers to try and get visa. Went to Ghana because they were not accepting international students. Back then, you had to go to Ghana to process your visa. So for some reason, by miracle, I don't know how my mother raised money to pay 1 year school fees. It was a lot of work, but she managed to do it. So then I was convinced that maybe we could afford this thing. So you know, we got the receipt. I looked at her, so she had a couple of friends that helped through the process. Went to Ghana, and my mom had this habit, you know, and I'm sure many Nigerian parents, any document, you know, I don't know if some parents still do it now, any document that you get, they will go and laminate it. My mother, when you say coin of lamination. So they sent the receipts from the university that accepted me, which was University of Windsor. My mother went to laminate it. It was like, you know, priceless gold that she wanted to make sure that it was safe. Now, we got to Ghana. And, you know, it was supposed to be a 2 days trip to Ghana. We got to Ghana. The first, as I went, we straight from the airport. No, we got to Ghana on Sunday. I went for the interview, the visa interview on Monday. And I was rejected. We were not expecting to be rejected, you know, because we had the gold, you know, laminated. So the first rejection was like, no, we don't believe in this receipt. Yes, you guys came from Nigeria, you know, however misguided information that those that were there may have heard of Nigeria. You know, we don't believe in the receipt outright. I was like,
so they just thought it was faked?
Yeah, because it was laminated. Now, I'll tell you a story. Every single time that because of the time difference, it, from Ghana, with Ghana and Canada, the school, the university was always closed. So we will make phone calls. So that was very frustrating. Then I told my mother, then, you know, we had stayed in Ghana for like about a week or more. And my mother, she was the breadwinner for three generations. You know, she took care of our parents, siblings, and us, just from having one shop in Aladdin Market. So I looked at her like, mommy, the way, the miracle that it took you to raise this this money that we used to pay, if there's nobody in Aladdin Market, there's no, we, money will not come. So you go back to Nigeria, I'll tell you, just know I won't come back to that country. I think I was 18 then, or 19, one of those, 18. I won't come back until they give me this visa. That one, I can guarantee you that, you know. So she went to Nigeria. She looked at me and just like, okay, oh. But she's son on it, you know, the way. So she went to Nigeria. So I was interviewed, because every time they rejected me, I kept applying. So the fourth time, so they had found a new reason, you know, from a document that we submitted that, okay, you know what, they've realized, you guys, you cannot afford a 4 years degree. That's a no-no. So the two other rejections were based on, forget the receipt, you know. I think University of Windsor had communicated with me. So it was no longer the receipt now. It was like, from the account that you people submitted, something is not accounting, you know. So the next two rejections were based on that. And I just decided, I stayed in Ghana. I think I stayed there for over 2 months. Just make, you know, I was determined, you know, the resilience to just, no matter what, I was determined to come to Canada. So the first time, you know, God so have it, you know, as it's always been there for me, he sent a helper. So it was a different lady that interviewed me. And she looked at me and said, I've seen all the notes why you were rejected the first few times. Let's be honest, you cannot afford this thing. Right. You guys cannot afford this. Yes, we understand you paid for 1 year. We communicated with the University of Windsor, but based on visa rules, we have to be convinced that you can afford 4 years. So I'm like, you know what? I understand that. And why do you keep applying? And it was what she said. I said, because I've told my mother and I've decided, regardless of what happened, I will come, I'll go to Nigeria with a visa. So she said, well, she had good news for me. And looking at my school results, that she was convinced that I would make it in Canada. But she wouldn't give me 4 years. She gave me the 1 year visa. She was like, look, after this 1 year, if you cannot afford, they would send you back. So give me the 1 year, and the rest is history. I found, you know, I got here 2022 January. I mean, 2002 January. So that's how I got here.
And you literally landed in the middle of winter too.
Oh my god! I landed. So my flight was routed to Dorval Airport in Montreal. Now, I had an aunt that lived in Windsor. My neighbor in Nigeria, the older sister, she lived in Windsor. That's why we decided that, yes, I'll go to University of Windsor as compared to, you know, as opposed to other schools. So she gave me the address from Montreal to Windsor. So when you get there, just take the train. This is, you know, or call me, you know. My dear, when I got out of that airport, after I had my luggage, the wind of cold that blew in my face in January, I ran back. And when I ran back inside the airport, I had to question, you know, myself. Maybe you should just settle with this one year and go back to next year. Yeah.
Oh my days. Okay. Thank you for sharing that though. Like, cause I mean, even the at 18, 19, like you said, to just from that age, just knew that we die here. See this Ghana. I become a Ghanaian. If I don't get this by visa, I will start eating banku and egg every day.
Honestly, like it was exactly what you said. So the point is, when we got to Ghana airport, the taxi that we got, the taxi driver became, as my mom, she was great at just being friendly. And so the taxi driver became our family in Ghana. I remember Mr. Thompson. They even gave me a girlfriend there. But they didn't tell that. But Mr. Thompson said, young man, I've seen your determination. You know, so yeah, he didn't need a companion to be talking to. He's just to be talking to. They gave me a girlfriend.
Wow. That's so funny. Oh, my days. But, like, it's so cool how, like, God just sends people to make your journey easier in a way, right? To kind of lighten the load. To just, and that thing of determination, too. I feel like sometimes life will just test you that, this thing that you say you want to do that you're not getting back, let me even see how serious you are. And you know, some people, like, after one or two rejections, they're like, oh, it's not my destiny, right?
A quick I'll make this as brief as possible. A quick note, and one of the reasons why I was very determined going to get the visa was, you know, doing the test, because you have to do a medical test. The way I was scared in Nigeria. You know, I used to run. But anyways, the way I was so scared that, Akeem, have you done something? I couldn't think of anything specific, but I was so scared. You go to the barber, barb your hair. Sometimes you won't take your clipper. I was doing a lot of overthinking. There was a period when we went to actually get the actual result. Me and my mother, we sat there. I stood up, went to pray, and told God, God, if this result comes back and there is nothing, my God, there is nothing, please, you know, anybody that needs help, I'll always be there. I made so many covenants with God. But anyway, so that's why I was determined, like, you know what, open to God. And that's how it happened.
That's how it started. Oh my, well, thank you for sharing that. Like, it can be really tough. And I think people, like, kind of gloss over it, that, if you're in abroad, that means your family, you are Bilonia, that means you are one senator's son or one, you know, politician's daughter. Or, like, there's a lot of, like, preconceived notions. Like, some people don't realize the grit and, like, intelligence and favor, really, that carries people here and keeps them going. And by the time you hear people's story of where they're coming from, you will not believe your ears, because of, like, how they have, you know, just held on and fought through every single thing that life threw their way. You know what I mean? So, yes, thank you for sharing that. Let's move on to, you know, you're here, you went through Ghana, now you're in Canada, you're a Canadian, you're in Windsor in winter, right? You're about to start school. What was school like? So you came to study economics, I believe you said. So what was that like for 4 years, or however long your degree was? What was that like as a Niger guy in Windsor? You're in this new educational system, you know, you've come from, you know, secondary education to your university education. Like, what was settling here like? What was building community like? What was navigating literally, like, the day to day like for you?
I'll say, to start, the beginning was very rough. First semester, second semester. I'll say rough from actually the first week, because I had my rude awakening of culture shock. I think it was my first week in university. I went to McDonald's. being in Nigeria, you hear McDonald's and all of that.
Yeah.
So I went to McDonald's. Yeah. And I went there with one of my friends and stupid boy. we got there. And, you know, all I just wanted was, I knew from Nigeria they sell burger in McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And back then, burger to me, as an Ibadan boy, I grew up most of my life in Ibadan, spent like about 4 years in Lagos before I moved down here. Burger was, yeah. You know, something, and meat is in the middle. That's it.
Yes.
And that's something that could be any, could be anything. Meat is in the middle.
Yeah. So meat is in the middle, yeah.
You know, when it was my turn to order, I said, give me burger. The girl looked at me, and I said, I'm so very confident. You know, give me burger. Girl said, she looked at me, just burger? I said, yeah, give me burger. And she started mentioning, oh, what about the bun, the this, the lettuce? I didn't understand all of those things. And mind you, there were some terms that were still a bit strange to me. Mm-hmm. I haven't been here for 1 week. So she was like, okay, just the burger. This girl, she went and gave me the meat.
The meat? Yeah.
And she was like, what about drink? I said, give me Fanta.
Oh.
That was my first week embarrassment. Yeah, I had another one. I rode my bike through the drive-thru, arguing with them. Yeah, bloody all that time.
Oh my goodness.
The first semester was very rough. I came here majoring in, I believe it's economics and accounting. Economics and accounting, mm-hmm. I believe. So, because that was the next thing that I was good at in high school. But my mm-hmm. first semester, whether it was language shock, I thought I was pretty smart in high school. I got to university, started scoring like pure negative marks in my tests. Like, there was, yeah. So my first semester was an academic probation. And academic probation back then, if you're on academic probation twice, you get thrown out of the school or you get sent to college. So my first semester, which was a winter semester, was an academic probation. I called my mother. I remember back then they had all this bell payphone. I was crying, mm-hmm. payphone. Mommy, mo ti fail, which, you know, in Yoruba, the meaning is, mommy, I failed. You know, mm-hmm. she never really yelled at me. Because I explained, I said, mo ti fail. She was like, you know what? There's no need to, you know, to cry. So what can we do? Because she was pure solution oriented. Okay, Kilamashi. You know, I told her, okay, instead of taking the summer break off, I will enroll in school in the intersection and summer. So no break, just to take a couple of classes and get the max off. The worst mistake in my life. The worst mistake, because those classes were shorter classes. I failed. Then that was when it hit me that the 1 year visa that they gave me, luckily, one of my friends, no, it was actually a friend of a friend that I met during the process. And it wasn't, the results were not out before I knew that I failed. Because, you know, when you write the exam, you know the marks that you had before you went into the exam. You know that you have failed even before the results came out.
Yes, that's true.
Know? So I knew that, hey, while I don't share it, you know, I had failed. So I was talking to one of my friends in front of his other friend. Then the guy dropped a nugget, you know. He said, mm-hmm. Akeem, never say never. Boss know they die for a movie. I say, hey. Say, actor, sorry. Actor no did that.
Actor no did that for movie.
See, now you see, he never finished. You know, I'm like, ha, okay, let me hear what this man has to say. It was like, what you need to do tomorrow, since they're still doing exams, the exam time is not over, go straight to the registrar's office, look at your results, look at a couple of courses that you did better in. Yes, your major, you perform woefully. Change your major to those courses that you did better, especially if you have about two of them from the same department. Those courses happen to be my sociology classes. So I went to change it before the results came out. So as results came out, I was no longer on academic probation because I had changed my major. I changed my major. I decided, okay, you know what? Since these were sociology classes, I will change my major to criminology and sociology, which, you know, more in line to the law that I wanted to come to.
Right.
So from there, I just never looked back, you know, results wise. But it was, you can imagine how rough that first year, mentally feeling like I'm disappointed, knowing there was no longer money coming. It was rough. Yeah. It was rough. But, you know, I believe my resilience, you know, to just make sure that regardless, I will always find solution, helped me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you for that little nugget that you just dropped. I don't know if any international students are listening to this, but it's not over until it's over. Actor, no, they die for movie. You know, there is always a solution, and it's just about finding the right information, right? And luckily, again, God sent you a helper. Like, there was just someone somewhere that said the right thing that made you, that kind of helped your journey move forward, right? So shout out to those people, man, because you never can tell, right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Now, let's talk about in school, because I always ask this question on almost every episode, about your sense of self and identity, moving from a Nigeria, like, you know, moving from a black country, Nigeria, Africa, right? And now you're in a place where it's predominantly white, you know, and it's very, like, so many things are so different. Like, did you ever struggle with finding community or trying to, like, readjust your idea or sense of self, or, like, you know, what was all that like? Were you like, hey, I blended easy, it wasn't really a struggle for me, you just, you know, was that your own journey? Would you mind sharing that with us?
So I'll say my journey was a lot smooth, because Windsor, the city of Windsor in Ontario, Windsor at that time that I got to Windsor, it was more of the hub for international students. So a lot of international students rallied around each other, you know, whether international students from India, a lot of international students from Pakistan, so you literally be in class of 200 people, over 250 out of those were international students. So the same struggle that I went through, all of those people went through, but we managed to form, you know, a core group, whether in the library, whether the student center, and
right.
we became the major group, you know.
I see.
So culturally, we had the African Union, the Pakistani Student Association that came together. So the international student became the majority. Other culture, you know, or the Canadians wanted to actually blend in with many of us. So the only place where I had issues were more of in the class with, you know, Canadian teachers. The language barrier was there, the understanding. I remember taking one class, I think it was algebra or economics, one of those. I think it was algebra. And then I didn't understand. When I was teaching math, I didn't understand most of the accent. He spoke faster than any, you know, body. So
they've ever heard.
Yeah. I went to him. He actually made me push myself in Windsor. I went to him, tried to explain, like, sir, I find it difficult to understand you, and you don't have to spend extra time with me. Is it possible to assign me to one of your tutors? The guy literally told me, look, you have to wait until the next sets that are coming, which were students coming next year, because you're going to fail this class.
Ah, literally. It was a guarantee.
It was a guarantee, you know. And that pushed me to go, you know, hire one of the international students, a Pakistani student, to, you know, teach me, to give me like an hour or two extra. Mm-hmm. So I'll say classroom, I had some difficulties. Maybe those difficulties contributed to my failure.
But I mean,
yeah,
for real, like people don't realize that, yes, you speak English in Nigeria, yes, but then they speak English here. It's English, but the dialect is different. You know, tongue is different. The way you hear it is different. You know, like the pace of speaking, they speak very, very quickly. You know, the accent is very, very, especially when they're talking about, sometimes it's rough and really hard to follow just a normal hello, hi conversation, not to talk of someone teaching mathematics, right? Yep. With this accent that you've never in your life had to deal with before. Like, a lot of people think, oh yeah, you just move. It's not English. I cannot count the number of times in smaller, and that's the thing, right? When you're in smaller classrooms, you're able to just say, excuse me, please, can you repeat that? Like, you can, as opposed to a gigantic classroom where, you know, there are so many people from so many faculties there. It's over 100, 200 people in one big amphitheater of a classroom. And now you cannot raise up your hand to say, uncle, please repeat it. You can't, you know? And there's also the thing of, oh, I don't want to be the one that seems like, there's that kind of, you're self-conscious, exactly, too, about your own accent, and you're self-conscious about, what would these people think of me? Everybody looks like they're understanding. Okay, let me to be nodding my head as if I'm understanding.
So you feel like, you know, the odd one out. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, truly. And so that you won't feel, exactly, you just said it. And so I completely understand. And I hope, like, people, and lots of people will say that too. It's English, but it's not really it has a tweak, yeah. But over time, your ears become like, your ears, you know, more attuned to,
exactly,
the,
I would even say quicker. Like, it could take you 6 months to start understanding majority of what folks are saying, but your, yeah, first 1-2 months, ha, mm-hmm, okay. those are the difficult months.
Difficult months. Okay. Yes. Okay. Awesome. Can you talk a little bit about, because now, you know, fast forward 4 years, you know, you changed your course. You didn't have to, you were no longer on academic probation. And now, you know, you're graduating. So did you end up practicing in the sociology courses that you took in your new major? Did you end up practicing that, like, after graduation? Like, what was that like, trying to find a job and settling here?
No, my goal was to go to law school, be a lawyer. That's what I've always wanted to be since, you know, I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So I was, when I switched my major to criminology and sociology, my grades became extremely better. Graduated with honors, but I had, you know, some stumbling blocks, like financially. I was not receiving money every semester because it was difficult. So I decided that I was going to just get a general degree. Just for me to have a degree, that way my immigration point would be, would qualify, I mean, the degree would qualify me for some points, because it was point system. I believe, I don't know if they still do point system here. Being an international student here and graduating in Canada, it improves your chances of getting your PR. So, of course, it took me about 4 years or so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took me about 4 years to get the general degree, which is 3 years, because there were some semesters I wouldn't be in university because there was no money. But, you know, when I actually eventually graduated with the general degree, I didn't get my certificate because I was owing the university money. They just presented me a bill, you know, in form of certificate, so people could see.
So you use it to snap
picture. Yeah, I use it to snap picture, you know. So yeah. I had a lot of immigration challenge. Well, yeah. So it took a long time from when I graduated to when I got my permanent residence. It took over four years. Mm-hmm. So by then, when I eventually got my PR, I felt like it was a bit late, you know, for me to start going to law school, because it wasn't still, the money was still not there to go to law school. Decided to move to Calgary, did, you know, oil and gas. Took some oil and gas courses, started working, and, you know, even before then, back in university in Windsor, the way I supported myself was, you know, sell clothes on campus. I was one of those guys you see with duffel bag. Anything where you define, you did inside that duffel bag. Whether it was the, you know, Aviso jeans, Red Monkey jeans, name it, whatever there was in style, you know, I sold women shoes, stilettos, bras, and name it, I sold it. And so that's how I supported myself. And of course, a couple of mania door-to-door, under the table knocking job.
Yeah.
I supported myself in Windsor, and you know, throughout my time in Windsor, God sent a lot of helpers to me. Some of them are my closest friends now, that I refer to them as brothers. And some of them, God just sent them to my life. I remember my financial difficult time when I, you know, in Windsor, the church behind my house was feeding me, you know. So there were a couple of challenges that God sent a helper my way.
Mm-hmm. That's so, like, God is so cool. I know this is not like a church like episode or anything, but, like, you know, that's part of your story and you're boldly declaring that. You went back and took some courses in oil and gas, and then you did it, so you basically started working in that industry.
So actually, after I got my permanent residence, I went back to University of Windsor. Because I only had a general degree, and I went back to do another degree to complete criminology and get a degree in actual criminology and political science. So I went back just to finish that, you know, degree. So I ended up getting 2 degrees, price of one.
A round of applause.
Price of one. Yeah,
2-for-1 special. Yeah, okay.
Came to Calgary. I came to Calgary. Decided, you know, to take oil and gas course. I took a course in SAITE, so I am a SAITE alumni. Started working in the oil and gas as an abandonment and reclamation analyst for Cenovus Energy. Did that for over 3-4 years, I believe. In Calgary.
So how did you transition to literally starting a fashion house? Like, what was the transition between working in oil and gas to literally, you know, building Farihara?
Well, so my growing up in Nigeria, watching my mom, you know, as being the matriarch of the family, watching and just learning from some of our entrepreneurial skills, some of the things that I was helping her with at a younger age, like going to the airport, helping her deal with customs, talking to customs, clearing her goods. And my mother sold, you know, clothes, gold. So she was very fashionable. So that's where I got my fashion, or my first love for fashion was from my for fashion from my mother. So just being exposed to how to run a business, or how to even engage people without selling them anything, you know. So I learned that from my mother. So in Windsor, that what got me to start selling stuff on campus. And when I moved to Calgary, I was making good money with, you know, Cenovus Energy. Shout out to Cenovus Energy, an amazing company here in Calgary. I was making good money, but I was not satisfied. I was not satisfied at all. I wanted to start something. I wanted to own my own business. So there were days I would go to the office, close my office door, kneel down, and start praying that God, this no be out, you know. And of course, like, I was making good money. So sometimes I would feel like, guy, you know, why you not just appreciate what God give you? But, you know, I've said this at a speaking engagement. The moment you decide to hold on, you know, a firm, you have a firm grip to your comfort zone, that's when you stop thinking. That's when you stop wanting to be better than what you are now. Many of us don't, once we start making money that we're comfortable, where, you know, when you look down, you'll see many people be below you, you start to feel some sort of,
I've arrived.
You've arrived. That comfort zone set in.
Yeah.
Honestly, I just wanted to be better. I wanted to have something that I could say has my DNA in it. In 2014, a friend of mine introduced me. I think he was looking for a business to do in the States, who is one of my, you know, very, very good friend. Like, Akeem, let's go to China. Let's just go check out this trade fair. Happens to be the biggest trade fair in the world. So took a vacation when, you know, I went by myself a couple of times. I went with him once. Then I decided to go. I decided to just use my vacation period at Cenovus specifically for taking trip to different trade fairs, most especially the one in China, because that's where you meet suppliers from all over the world. They congregate there. So whatever that your need that you want, you can literally find it there. And just to, you know, many people have the misconception when you say you're going to China, they think you're going to go and get Chinese made. Nothing is wrong with Chinese made products, by the way. They are just more,
most things are made there. Most designer things we wear today, we see all over the place.
They're more efficient out there. So because of the efficiency, some people like, oh, it's, you know,
quality, exactly. Yeah, which is not true.
Exactly. And when you mention China, no, I'm not necessarily going to get my products made there, but you get to meet suppliers from all over the world. You get to interact with many of these guys.
Yeah.
Started using my vacation at Cenovus to travel. You know, I made an intentional decision to just go blank slated. No idea of what I wanted to do. Just look around. And yeah, it just so happened that I was doing that, then 2016 I got laid off. Fortunately, I got laid off. The reason why I say fortunately, I'm not sure whether you're familiar with the Isaac Newton story, the law of gravity, that, you know, when he sat under the apple tree, then apple fell on his head and came up with the law of gravity.
The law of gravity.
You know how many people that sat under that same apple tree? The apple fell on their head. They didn't come up with the law of gravity, but
right.
He came up with that because all the things that he had read, all the preparation that he had done prior to the moment now made sense when that apple fell on his head.
Yeah, it was in alignment. Yeah.
So,
in a way,
my trip, believe a week and a half, I got fired. I said it was April 12th, 2016.
Wow, you know the dates.
Oh, you know, some things that you just never forget, because you don't forget not because they were bad. And that's why I said, fortunately. Because
right.
That getting laid off propelled me to be where I am today. You learn from things that happen, whether good or bad. That date is very important to me. So, fortunately for me, I had requested for vacation. No, I didn't request for vacation. I had booked my ticket knowing I had vacation time to use and knowing that I could get the time off if I requested for it. I bought my ticket, planned my trip, and I got laid off before I even put it in. Got laid off a week after I traveled again. I went on that trip, and that trip was when that apple fell on my head. It wasn't a trip before or two trips before that particular, a week and a half after was when that apple fell on my head. And the rest is history.
Can I ask how you came up with Farihara? Because Farihara Custom Menswear is an incredible, you know, company based in Toronto and, you know, Calgary, right? Where you make menswear, bespoke, you know, fashionable suits. Like, I've seen you wear some in some events. I've seen, you know, the website. I've heard reviews from it. Like, I was on a show where we got to use your, you were one of the sponsors for that particular film, and we got to use your suit for that particular show. And, you know, it's just incredible quality, incredible designs, like very, very sharp looking. So shout out to you and the, you know, Farihara team. And thank God that apple fell on your head, right? Because now you have this incredible thing, like you said, with your DNA in it, right? So like, how did you come to Farihara as a name for this brand?
Well, thank you. And shout out to the Farihara team. Shout out Reed, that's my business partner, my co-founder. Right. So honestly, when I eventually knew what I wanted to do, when that apple fell on my head, I wanted a name that spoke to my background. Wanted the name that spoke to the being an African. I didn't want, you know, another English name, but I wanted the name to also roll out well when people call it. You know, I think it was one of this, I think it was probably June or so, or, you know, earlier than June. I used to go for a run with my very good friend, Femi Bode George, back in 2016.
FBG.
Shout out to FBG.
Agora Sound.
FBG, don't you say those are 12K, 10K run. You know, at least we made something from it. And it's funny, you know, everything that Femi does in the city, we had those conversations. Before we both even started, we had those conversations whenever we were doing our morning run or evening run. Wow. Right. Yeah, so again, I left it to God that God, you know, just help me with a name, because I thought I was good with words, but nothing did come. Nothing was coming. Then at the end of one run, I just thought about Safari, Sahara. Those were the two names that were coming to my mind. Like, who names their company Safari, Sahara? That's so, like, come on now. Like, that's obvious.
Right.
So it dawned on me later that, you know what? That those names, they actually encompass, like, the different landscape of Africa. And you look at Safari, it takes into consideration the Eastern Africa and the Southern Africa. And when you look at Sahara, it speaks to the Northern Africa and Western Africa. So the landscape of Africa, both Safari and Sahara. So we decided to take our SA from Safari. That's how we came up with Fari. SA, we took out SA from Sahara, and we got Hara, Fari Hara, and it rolled out well, and it's become an household name now, thanks to God.
Yes, Fari Hara. And so what made you choose menswear? Because, like, I mean, I really want to hear your take on that, because, like, you know, most people will say, oh, if you want your business to say, women buy things a lot, just go into women clothing, go into women, you know? And, you know, you very clearly had a vision and you had a plan and you had, like, something you were working towards. And so what inspired menswear? I know, obviously, apart from the fact that you're a man, obviously, right? What was the main motivation for, like, let's do menswear?
So, back in university, as I mentioned, I sold to women, but I sold more to men. And of course, I believe selling can do itself without you stating it. You can look it. Once you look it and people see it, you don't need to sell. That right there, you become the billboard for whatever that you do.
Exactly.
So with selling for men, it was easy because some of the things that I was selling on campus, I was wearing. So it was easy for me to just kind of focus with selling menswear. And even after university, I started an accessory company. Making ties and cufflinks. Again, men. So when you look at the trajectory from the streetwear to accessories, then to suits, it's kind of gives you insight about my journey as a man. Whether from the young boy wearing the streetwear to fresh graduate, that the only thing that will make you look official is your tie, you know?
Your tie and cufflinks. Yeah.
So it was easy. I wasn't, like, I won't say there was an intentional decision that we would do, I'll do menswear, but the trajectory of my growth was just in that lane. And the apple that fell on my head again was menswear. And my business partner, meeting my business partner a couple of, you know, months after, he was also in menswear. You know, but as a company, Fariara, I wanted to actually correct you. We are moving to rebranding to Fariara Custom Tailoring, because make garments for women now. We made tons of garments for TV show hosts, name it.
Yes. Yes.
So we make garments for women. So not just menswear.
Not just men. Okay, that is awesome, because Absolutely. Why? And because of the quality of stuff you I've seen, right? I've seen for men. It's so good to hear that you're also pivoting towards making things for everyone and for women too, and making more bespoke and custom tailoring. Like, that's so exciting. So yes, thank you for correcting me. And you know, both of us, we've talked about this a little bit before, of like how the way that you dress can literally elevate your mood, can literally, like, you wake up if you're feeling like, ugh, you know, not so great. By the time you dress up and wear your, you know, dress really well, look in the mirror and you like what you see, by the time you leave your house, you're walking in confidence. And, you know, there's just something that clothing does to people and for people, right?
Yeah, 100%. With our brand, that's the conversation that we often, whether, you know, we directly have with our clients or imply it in some of the ways that we do things. If I ask, what you wear should essentially instill confidence in you. Uh-huh. Not just wearing clothes for the sake of its clothes.
Right.
I just need to cover myself. Or I just need to, when you're intentional about what you wear, that piece of clothes that you are intentional about instills some type of confidence, adds a layer of confidence to the one that you have, to the point that the garment that you wear leaving your house may have a powerful effect in dictating your day.
Yes.
About clients, I have a particular client, shout out to Brad. One of our clients here is a lawyer in the city. And Brad literally told me, Akeem, anytime, it's never happened that whenever he wears, or, you know, he wears fiery hair, he loses a case. He said it's never happened. He said, this way his words direct.
Wow.
Yeah. There's always an extra layer of confidence when he wears the fire, especially when he wears a three-piece and walks into the court. He said he's never lost a case because of how he feels in it. He sent so many clients to us. And that is what we, as a brand, those are the type of personal review that makes us want to continue to do what we do here.
Yeah, 100%. And your story, thank you again so much for sharing, literally from the beginning to where you are now. And it's just so, it's really, truly, like you said, is a story of resilience and determination and being intentional, right, with your life, with your every single step, not giving up, pushing forward. And, you know, it just instills hope. Like, for me, listening to it, I just feel very, like, I feel I'm learning, and I'm learning that, okay, Sarah, the man, never give up. Nigeria no dey carry last. Actor no dey die for few, you know, being intentional and pushing forward every single step of the way. So thank you so much for sharing that. And a lot of people, we've talked about this before, of, like, people using being an immigrant as some sort of a crutch, like, you can't also achieve great things. Right. And I mean, you're literally a walking testimony of, you know, you've achieved incredible things, and your journey was never easy, but you were resilient and you kept going every single step of the way. And, you know, you're still pushing and pushing, and, you know, even growing your brand. Like, it doesn't even end with starting Farihara. It's improving it, growing it, right, from a menswear to a tailoring a house where you cater to everyone. Right. Can you speak a little bit on that, of just like that thing of, yes, you're an immigrant, so what? You can achieve the greatest things too.
Yes. You know, I've grown, I guess, every year, or every experience that happens to me, I've grown from them, regardless of what the results of those experiences are. Sometimes the results of those experiences may not necessarily be what I anticipated, but I have grown from it. So I will use this opportunity to speak to anyone who feels like being an immigrant is or can contribute to them not being the best version of themselves. Look, regardless of what you're going through, I've gone through, is it immigration issues? Is it culture shock? Is it language barrier? Name it. I have gone through, and which I believe many of, you know, many of you or many people listening to this, you have gone through similar things. But I think it's really important to equip ourselves with act or no, they die for movie. You know, which means the main character in the movie does not die or does not give up. Yeah. There's more to the power of resilience than we decide to do. Because when you are resilient, you continue to learn. And being resilient to me is learning from every single situation. So I came here as an immigrant, as an international student. Mm-hmm. Immigration-wise, I've had the deportation letter to get out of the country.
Wow.
It still did not hold me back. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what you're going through, let's not hold on to the firm grip of our comfort zone. You're comfortable with making an excuse. You're comfortable with just reaching out for the most convenient excuse. Let's not hold on to that firm grip, because you will not amount to anything other than, you know, ah, not because I'm not in my country, not because I'm an immigrant. Whatever that you're doing in your country, you know, or whatever you intended to do where you come from, you can do that times 10 here in Canada. So,
or wherever you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And that's literally the truth. Like, I've heard of, because you know the tax system here, TAX, like the system here with taxes, there are literally people who, because they, some people, I've heard stories, man, and folks come here, whether it's on, you know, refugee status or whatever, and they're just like, well, because they have government support. And with government support, the moment you start earning a particular amount of money, the government support stops. So I've literally heard of people who will choose not to work because they don't want the support of the government to stop. Even if they could be making more than the government is giving them, because it's not a ton of money, right? Even though they could be making more than what the government is giving them, they would rather not work. It would just do, I don't like the government. Or there are people that will refuse to work more than a certain level, because they don't want to pay more than a certain amount in taxes. Like, there's so many different, like, and you just hear these stories of people. I'm like, bro, in a lot of these countries, you're afforded opportunities that, you know, you may not get where you're coming from. Why not take advantage of it? Exactly. Right? And it's mind-boggling to me. So that's why I love your story of resilience so much. Like, you know, you've literally, like you were saying, financial struggles, immigration struggles, language barrier, cultural struggle, like it just all of it, right? So even building your own company from scratch, I'm sure that was not easy, because it's not easy, right, to do anything from scratch. So, like, you know, kudos and shout out to you for sharing your story, for your own resilience in your own journey and how far it has taken you. Like, you know, shout out to you. Thank you. And yeah, and thank you for coming onto this podcast to share your story and just, you know, leave us with, you know, so much knowledge and hope and, you know, inspiration, I guess, will be the word I'm looking for, inspiration to just, you know, buckle up and keep going. Would you like to leave a word of wisdom? I feel like you've already done that with Act or No They Die for movie. I feel like that's literally the word of the day. But, you know, would you like to leave us with a word of advice, word of wisdom, proverb, anything? Or you can also go with that. Like, it's up to you.
Well, so what I'll say for those that wherever you are, in the world, I know it's easy to sit here and say, you know, don't reach for an excuse, or, you know, don't hold on to the firm grip of your comfort zone. It's easy to say that because I have been through it, you know, but for some people that you want to get off that comfort zone, but you just don't know how. What I will recommend, look for relatable success stories around you. Where we live here in Calgary, there's the Charles Osuchi, there's Patrick Okokse, there is the Wally Johnson, the Nelson Osamudien. Look for success story. You know, there's Richard Amatoku. There are a lot of people. Yeah,
there's Wumi doing incredible
like,
things.
There are a lot of people that came here as immigrants that you can look at their stories. Wherever you are, just look for relatable success story. People that you see around you. Start from there. And that's all I can say to anyone. I guess if that is a advice of wisdom or word of wisdom or story of wisdom.
I mean, it is though, because sometimes it can be so far, it can look so far-fetched that I want to get from point A to point B, but how? Like I can feel stuck, but you're right. By the time you look around and you're like, oh, you know, this person, you see them around, hear about them, wherever you are, whether you're in the US, in the UK, Russia, China, it doesn't matter. But you hear about people who kind of did it, and by you read about their story, or if they're accessible to you, you can even literally sometimes just offer to take them for coffee, to just ask them some questions about their own journey. You might be so surprised by how willing people are to share and to help others out.
Exactly. And yeah. You know, mentorship doesn't have to be, it could be, you know, and I don't like to use the term mentorship. The term mentorship makes sense when you get to a certain phase, when you've made a decision in your mind that regardless, you want this person to, you know, help you. You can learn from other people's stories. And maybe you just need to hear their story like you've heard some of mine today. You know, or you take them out for coffee to just tell you their stories. Mm-hmm. And you may find something that lets that apple drop on your head.
On your head. Like, honestly, you've dropped a few nuggets, man. The apple falling on the head, you know, Isaac Newton's story, to act on with the Kairos, to like look for relatable success stories around you. Like, that's a really good key. Okay, as we round up, Mr. Hakim, would you like to leave your information on maybe social media, your social media info, or your even for your business, for Farihara, just so people can, you know, go check it out, go check out your social media, or check out Farihara, maybe the website, anything like that you'd like to share?
Well, the website for the company is Farihara, FARIHARA.com. Instagram is Fari, Fari underscore Hara, Hara. You can reach out to us as a company, but if you want to reach out to me as an individual, you can reach out to me on Instagram, which is just JUST underscore I underscore law, LAW. That's my Instagram handle. Or if you see me on the street, could go for coffee. I'm happy to sit down and have a conversation. All right? Thank you so much, Leroy, again, for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for coming through. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for just like leaving us with that word of wisdom. Thank you for motivating us and giving us hope. And you know, it's, you know, motivating us to be resilient and to just keep going, that by pushing forward, you will move forward. So thank you once again, Hakim. And to our listeners, we're going to say bye-bye until our next episode. Bye. Bye. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Afros in the Diaspora. I hope this episode left you feeling inspired and hopeful. To engage, feel free to like, follow, share, and subscribe to Afros in the Diaspora on all social media and podcast platforms. Remember to leave a review and a rating. If you would like to be a guest, please reach out. Send an email to hi@afrosinthediaspora.com. That is hi@afrosinthediaspora.com, or send us a DM on Instagram @afrosinthediaspora. Remember, there is beauty in our stories and power in our voices. Together, we are stronger. Until next time.